Harihi Om Sana Bhavatu Sana Bhunaktu Saha Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhi Tamastuma Vibhishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Just go back and four. Okay, four kinds of intelligent persons. You have said that there are four kinds of intelligent persons. This is Yadava Das. What are their different statements of existence? Statements of existence or statuses of existence? And what is association with devotees? Ananta Das. There are four kinds of intelligent persons. They who are in the beginning stage of being intelligent, those who desire to attain liberation, they who are liberated, and they who have attained perfection, or in other words, devotees of the Lord. For persons in the beginning states of being intelligent, association with persons who desire liberation is good. Liberated souls may be divided into two groups. Liberated souls who taste the nectar of spiritual mellows, and to the Maya bodies. Those desire those who are liberated. These Maya bodies are considered offenders. All classes of people are forbidden to associate with them. The 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam 10.2.31, it is said, O lotus-eyed one, those who think they are liberated in this life, but do not render devotional service to you, must be of impure intelligence. Although they accept severe austerities and penances and rise to the spiritual position, to impersonal Brahman realization, they fall down again because they neglect to worship your lotus feet. The fourth kind of intelligent person, the devotees, are divided into two groups. They who worship the Lord in his feature of opulence and they who worship the Lord in his feature of sweetness. Association with such devotees is beneficial in every way, especially if one takes shelter of a devotee who is attached to the Lord's feature and sweetness. The nectar of pure devotional service rises within his heart. Okay, so it would appear here that these four kinds, then you can divide it into devotees and who are non-devotees. You can basically get both groups out of this list. You basically get both groups out of this list. So then one of the groups here means is they who are the... So with devotees, then you get all four. They are the beginning stages of being intelligent. In other words, they've taken up the devotional process. Because before we mentioned intelligent, there was intelligent and unintelligent. Intelligent was devotees, unintelligent were the non-devotees. Like that. But then, in relationship to liberation, it appears here they're also counting those who are interested in liberation as intelligent, that they're trying to get out of the material world. That's in this list. But otherwise, if you just have two, then unintelligent means devotees or non-devotees. Okay. Yeah. So then, those who take up beginning stages of being intelligent, so who are beginning devotional service, then they who desire liberation, so those who want to, they take up devotional service, but they want to become freed from this material world. Like you see, the devatas, they are devotees, but they're not really interested in becoming free from the material world, at least not at this point. They're quite happy with their position and all that. Maybe ultimately, but at the present they're not. Then they desire to attain liberation. So then they want to become free from the material crass. Well, that would basically be the madhyama, like that. So they take up, would have to attain liberation, then the mood of this Nishkam Karma Yoga would have to be accepted. Because Nishkama means is that it's not ours, it's not for us. So only those devotees would be able to, only that mood can attain to liberation. Because performing activities with knowledge and detachment, then that would give liberation. But as devotees, then they're doing that for Krishna. Then three, those who are liberated. So that would mean for the devotees, those on the platform of Baba. And then they who have attained perfection, or in other words, the devotees of the Lord, then those who are on the platform of Kanda. So that would be one way of mentioning this. So Kanista Madhyam Uttam, but in the stage of Rati, then Baba, and then four, then Prema. Then another is those who are the beginning stages of it being intelligent. In other words, they've taken up the process of Varnashram properly. Then two, they who desire liberation. So then they take up the impersonal path. And then they endeavor in this way for perfection. Then three, those who are liberated, they've actually attained to that impersonal position. They're freed from the material entanglement. So those persons will not get to four. Because three is all the farther they want to get. So it's said here that those who are Mayavadis, or those who are impersonalists, means the Mayavadis are offenders, and everybody's not supposed to associate with them. So it says those in the beginning states of being intelligent, it's good for them to associate with those who desire liberation. So that means someone on then for the Kanista, then the Madhyamas are very good for them, for their association. Like that. The Madhyamas who desire that liberation, then they are good association for the Kanista. Or those who are in the Varnashram system, who are interested in liberation, then are good for those who are taking up the process of, or seriously the process of Varnashram. So in either case. But of this, it's already been, the second group has already been rejected. Those who are the impersonalists have been rejected. So their association is not to be sought after. So then that leaves, then devotees. And then of devotees, so liberation is useless if it does not give devotional service. Right? And they'll fall down again. Because the Brahman being sat only, and the living entity being sat chit ananda, then they actually must get real happiness. Means the material happiness is, I think we discussed this before. Material happiness means that your Prabhupada explains it, that you're getting rid of some pain, right? Cessation of pain, like you're hungry, and then you eat and you consider that pleasurable. And one could say, no, eating is pleasurable on its own, it's nothing to do with being hungry. But if you keep eating and then you're full, then if somebody comes to give you more, it's actually painful. You don't want. It's a problem for you. Like that. So eating also, as you get fuller and fuller, the taste is lost. There's no taste. You find in the beginning of the meal how something tastes. At the end of the meal, it doesn't taste the same. So actually, it's just because the pain is going away, it's nice. As soon as it's gone, then there's no more pleasure is felt. Mm-hmm. Then it becomes you're full. And so then it's just like that. So the same way as liberation, the happiness, the Brahmananda that they speak about, isn't ananda. It means it's a material ananda, it's not a spiritual ananda. It's the happiness of being freed from material distress, being freed from the material encumberment. So that moment of liberation, one is very happy. And, but it's happiness from removing distress. It's not actually positive happiness. It's not actually ananda. So then when the living entity comes to the Brahman platform, then he wants to be active. And then there's no activity in the Brahman. For some time you can sit there and go, Aham Brahmasmi, right? But it won't be a long time. Just as we see, is we think, oh, here, I am living for 100 years, but if I go to the heavenly planets, I'll live for 10,000 years, or I go to Brahma's planet, then I'll live for trillions of years. But their experience is exactly the same. Brahma, to him, it's 100 years and not one day more. He doesn't feel like he's living 311 trillion years. No, he feels like he's living 100 years. So that the experience is the same. So the living entity goes to the Brahman. The Brahman's on the eternal time frame, right? There's no time there. So therefore, then he'll be there, you know, seemingly a long time for us. But it's not a long time for the living entity there, right? How long can you sit in the corner and meditate, right? You don't hear the impersonalists doing more than a few hours. You don't hear them, you know, yogis may perform meditation 24 hours. But even then, how long will they last in meditation? Right? You know, 10,000 years, 60,000 years, like that. There comes an end. Right? But that's yoga system. The impersonal system, they don't do such meditation. So they're not accustomed to so long. So you get to the Brahman. No, it's a long time in the Brahman, maybe millions and millions of years. But at some point, you're going to get bored and want to do something. Because ananda means relationship, you and something. Rasa has to be there. And so that means there has to be, you know, two for rasa. Like that, there can't be one. One does not create rasa. So then the living entity must again fall down. So they say they fall down because they neglect to worship the lotus feet. Because you get to the Brahman, but unless you take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, then there's nothing there to stay for. So the living entity will fall out of the Brahman to come back here, because that's all they know. Activity means the material world for that such a living entity. Therefore it's... they will fall down. Then of the fourth kind, then you have those who worship the Lord in opulence and those who worship Him in His feature of sweetness. So in other words, those who worship in Vaikuntha and those who worship in Vrindavan. So association with such devotees is beneficial because they are actually interested in serving the Lord. So by their association, then one can actually get spiritual benefit. And it says, especially those who are attracted to the Lord's feature in sweetness, because then the nectar of pure devotional service and the rites is in the heart. Otherwise, in the other, it's very wonderful, but it doesn't have the same sweetness that the happiness in serving in Braja. Yadav Das, you want to say something here?
Regarding how absence of misery is happiness, how do they understand things like when somebody works to achieve something and gets that?
Yeah, he has an anxiety to get that. And then when he gets it, that anxiety is over.
And he becomes bored of the thing that he got.
Yeah, and then you have to move on to the next. You know, because then we see is that happiness also is temporary. As soon as you get adjusted with it, then it's not experienced anymore. You know? Whatever it is. You're tired, so then when you first lay down, you think, so nice. You know, but then you go to sleep and then you just adjust with that, you know? So anything's like that. You know, if you're hot, you go into a place that's cold. Then, in the process of cooling down, you feel enjoyment. But once you've cooled down, there's no more enjoyment. You know, like that. You don't notice it. It's normal. So it's material happiness is therefore very temporary.
You gave the example of being hungry and then eating and then you're not hungry anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But eating is more than just being hungry and eating. There's so many different varieties, 6 rasas or flavors are there to be enjoyed
mm-hmm.
in the eating process. And so, the argument that pleasure in the material world is just relief from suffering.
No, but there's a need. Suffering means there is a need, and you want to fulfill that need. So when that is fulfilled, it's called happiness. If you technically look at everything, it's like that. So there's a need, you want to taste some sweet, some salty, some bitter. So it's an anxiety that you need that. And then you go through a process to get that. When you obtain that, your goal, then you call it happiness. But once you have it, then immediately the mind moves on to the next thing. You know? You're hungry, then you get that and you're full, then immediately, you know, take rest, go do something else, go here. You don't sit there and just relish having fulfilled your, you know, the needs of your appetite. You know, it just is not, it's not. You know, so what we see is that it's very temporary. It doesn't last long. The greater the need, then the longer it lasts. But still, it doesn't last that long. It has an end to how long it lasts. Does that make some sense?
Mm.
If you check anything, it's like that. You know, the poor man is, his need is money. So his anxiety. So if he gets that, he's very happy. But once he gets it, then he's thinking how to get more. How to spend it, how to protect it, how to, you know, say, oh, Hare Krishna. Why don't you sit here? You need to sit that side.
Even modern, as in neurologists, deal with the brains, they have discovered that all this feeling of anger and eating food is just something in the brain, and they can artificially excite that part of the brain and make you feel the satisfaction of eating a good meal. You're completely satisfied without even touching the food, not even seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
And they do it. They have done experiments. It's just a single thing in the brain.
Physically. Means is that in the spiritual world, things work on its natural way. It means the mind is a real mind, the intelligence is real intelligence, the senses are real senses. And that's because they're interacting also with reality, with Krishna. So there it's work. So there it works on its own. But here, it's not real. So it has to be artificially created. So therefore, all these things are created by the mind. The mind then creates in the body so much chemical reactions. And then that, you know, it's just like, you're hungry, so then that'll create some kind of thing in the stomach, and that will create so many things, and it's just a whole mechanical thing to create, you know, that need. So it's all done through the body, because the soul can't have any real attraction to the material energy. It can't relate to it. You know, it's just be like our. It's just we can't. You know, it's just like you wouldn't carry on an intellectual conversation with an aardvark. You know, it's just it can't be done. We couldn't relate to it, neither could the aardvark relate to it. It's just, it's not going to happen. So then the problem comes is that the living entity's in the material world, but he wants to enjoy and do everything as if he was. You know? So because of that, then there'll be a problem. So Krishna mechanically creates it through the way the body, the mind, the intelligence, the senses work. So they create an experience for the living entity. The living entity wants to enjoy this. He has a need for something. And so the modes of nature will create it. They'll create the mechanical situation. And then that situation then will... how do I say? That situation then will create some kind of happiness, you know, that we experience. But it's had to be created for us because we can't relate to the material energy. So then, but in the spiritual world, because the living entity is spiritual, Krishna is spiritual, everything's spiritual, there you can relate. So the mind actually works without mechanics. The intelligence works without mechanics. You know, all these things work naturally. But here, it has to be created So that's the thing. So many times also the devotees get caught up by that. They think my real needs, you know, like that. That either when they're youthful, when they're, you know, inexperienced, and they think that they've, by their ideas, have, you know, chalked out how the world should work, and, you know, they know at how everything goes. Or when one gets older, and then seeing the unfulfillment of one's desires, then one feels that the path that one has taken has been the wrong path, and so therefore I should take the path that will fulfill those desires. And so then they say, now I got to take care of me. But that me is just a mechanical brain and mechanical, you know, hormones and other chemicals that create the experience of... I mean, maybe you could move in a little more or something, otherwise. So then the problem comes is that there won't be any... There can't be any real satisfaction. But still, the mind, if it gets what it desires, that's called happiness. That moment it gets it, that moment it's happy. Only. After that, you're talking about how happy you were. You know? Like that. After that moment. Before that, how happy you will be. But otherwise, it's only a moment. That's the thing. Because present, for the materialist, is a moment only. They never live in the present. They're always living in the past or in the future. I will be, I was. Like that. Present they never, very rarely experience. So that when they experience that, that is considered a very strong, strong experience. But it's very powerful for them. Anything that will make you be, just at that moment, catches your full attention, then they consider it to be something very great, yes.
In the spiritual world, the mind can be conditioned to the sense of functionality instead of the material. So, I have this question regarding the liberated soul that the spiritual master teaches about. We say that in the spirit, we explain that we should not consider this body as material body. So, is it because it is in the transcendental realm that it can? His mind, senses, and intelligence can directly perceive like it would be in spiritual world.
That's one. The other is that it's engaged in Krishna's service. The body being engaged in Krishna's service, therefore, is spiritual. That would be. So both of those ways can be looked at. Is that the body is. See, because factually, material energy is just, it's inferior spiritual energy. It means everything's coming from Krishna, so technically everything's spiritual. But it just has greater and lesser degrees of superiority. Like that. It means the material energy is also made out of Brahman. You know, so in that way it's spiritual, but it's inferior Brahman, because it's not eternally manifested. It's full of ignorance, like this. So these, and it's full of pain. Pain for the living entity. Material energy, the wall doesn't feel any pain. You know, whatever happens. You know, so it's the material energy on its own is not a problem, doesn't have any problem. But the living entity in the material energy has a problem. And those in the spiritual world, they don't move in the material field. They move in the spiritual realm because their consciousness is there, so they're there. So that, therefore, the body that the great souls move in is also considered spiritual, because it's always in the association of the spiritual atmosphere created by the person who lives inside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This other point where the atheists are using this experience to deny the existence of God, that is this euphoria that you feel when a certain part of the brain is stimulated. is it actually spiritual, or is it the same experience of the Brahman, or is it actually spiritual?
Means, yeah.
Experience is the same.
There's difference. There's a difference. Because the scientists and all that, they're dealing with 1/10 of the brain. The other 9/10, they don't actually know why it's there, what it's for. You know? So there's something beyond even what they know, you know, is happening. But the soul can experience, you know, spiritual situation. But that's different. That's why it is then, you know, considered that is coming from within the heart. See, because the brain is the machine used by the heart. The mind, intelligence, and the ego are actually in the heart. They're not situated in the brain. But the brain is the mechanics through which the intelligence and mind work. They're just like the movement. Movement is done by air. The life air has moved the body. But because they press on the fire presses on the nerves, nerves press on the muscles, and muscles move the arm. But it's because the air moved, the arm moves. Air doesn't move, the arm doesn't move. But they don't know all these subtleties. So then even what is the mind and the intelligence is not there, but it functions through those. And because we identify with it, then these things are there. But you can go beyond them where they don't. For the liberated souls in that, they function beyond it. So even though they're in the body, it's not dependent upon the body. Like the Goswamis, you know, it's like if a conditioned soul was in physical shape that they were in, you know, they wouldn't be, you know, walking around Govardhan Hill every day, you know, and starting from Vrindavan, you know. Mm-hmm. Start from Vrindavan, walk over to Govardhan, go around, and walk back. It wouldn't be happening, you know.
I even see how Prabhupada dealt with his body in his last days.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, someone like that, you can't do. You can't. It means others would not be conscious, would not be, you know, just Prabhupada just went on. Physically, he couldn't move, but consciously, he was just doing everything as he would before. There's no difference. Just the body wouldn't cooperate with it. So there is that element of being separate from it. So the soul can't experience the spiritual without the brain and all that. Okay. Is that what I said?
So like most closest example of what you are saying is when we see the Archivigraha, even if it's material, we almost see it as spiritual.
No, a little different. Because in there, because the energy all is Krishna's, so Krishna and his energy are non-different. So if he wants to manifest his spiritual form in the material energy, it's not a problem. So he can manifest anywhere. Because actually everything's on his support anyway. It's all him anyway. It's just a matter of we're not able to perceive him in these other things like that. Or the perception is indirect. You know, it's through one of his energies or potencies or some aspect like that. But the deity means he manifests because it's all his energy anyway. So the deity is Krishna. We, due to our imperfect senses, still may perceive a stone or this or that. But at the same time, as it's not, it's directly Krishna. You know, therefore we see like the great devotee, you know, talk to the deity. Deity will move, walk, do so many things. You know, like that. The two Brahmins with Sakshi Gopal. So then he went and he spoke to the deity. And the deity replied, you know, you go back to your village and all that. And you know, they'll believe you. You know, just, he said, you know, all arranged like that. He says, no, you have to come as a witness. Otherwise, these people are such materialists, they're not going to believe if I say. And I went there to Vrindavan, and I spoke to the deity, and he said, like that, they'll all say, yeah, so you have to come. And then the deity said, but I'm a deity, I'm stone, how I'll come? So he said, if you can talk, you can walk. You know? So then he agreed. So then he came.
Isn't it also that the shape of the deity is not different from Krishna.
Yeah.
Just as his name, his qualities,
yeah, his form.
His lila, so that the form.
Form, yeah.
It becomes where that form is, that's Krishna.
Yeah.
So there's no question of installed and uninstalled.
Yes.
So the name is Krishna, the qualities, the lilas of Krishna, the shape is Krishna.
Yeah.
Even not depending on what it's made from.
Mm.
If it's from paint, if it's from wood, if it's from metal.
Mm.
And so I was thinking about Rupa Goswami's verse about the Vaishnav in Upadeshamrita. It says, don't see a devotee for his body, because even if it's deformed or from a low birth or diseased, because the devotee doesn't identify with that matter. He's not identified with that matter, so you can't identify him with that matter, because he himself doesn't identify with it.
That's a very good point. They probably were saying about that what's the conditioned nature. He says, what is the doctor? You know? And then, you know, someone said the gross body, some said the subtle body, and then probably said, no, the soul. The soul's the doctor. Because the soul identifies that I'm a doctor, therefore it has that particular subtle and gross body. Like that. Because as soon as you remove the soul, the body is not a doctor. You know? So the soul's the doctor, because he said, he thinks so, yeah. So that would support that. So the soul, the spiritual person doesn't identify with it, so therefore they're not that. They can't then therefore connect the two. Means they're in that place, so therefore the place where they are is then considered a place of pilgrimage, so they're respected. But otherwise they, one can't complain, you know.
In the sense that the devotee don't identify with the body, but for example, a proper disciple, a proper follower, his body also looks so spiritual. The shape of his soft feet. Sometimes the descriptions of the great devotees also, they talk about how the body was so full of different qualities.
But generally you see is that the purer the soul, then the nicer the body, because that's one of the signs of piety is personal beauty. That'll be one of the knowledge, personal beauty, you know, these things. Education, personal beauty, like that, good birth. But the thing is even if it's not good birth, it doesn't matter. But generally, you'll see, is most of them will be attractive. But at the same time, is especially in this age where others are not so qualified, they may not accept such attractive forms like that. Because otherwise, if they're so physically attractive in their natural form, then others will follow them just because they're so attractive, physically attractive. Right? I mean, you have so many people, they like, somebody's a celebrity because they look nice. You know, big actors and models and, you know, other people like that, musicians and different, just famous people, because they're very physically attractive, so people like them. So then that would be a problem. They would like them only because of their physical beauty, and they wouldn't actually take up the teachings. So the teachings are most important. So therefore we see that even then they may manifest all auspicious qualities, but in such a way that it won't be so bewildering, because others don't look like that. In previous ages, people did have, you know, great pure personalities, like Yayati's children. They all born, they had lotus eyes and great celestial beauty and all this. So you'd see them, you'd think they were demigods. So they would have the same beauty as demigods, the humans. You know? But now people don't, so if somebody did manifest that kind of beauty, they would be followed just for their beauty. You know, so then that's not the pure devotee comes to preach and teach and take one back to Godhead. So therefore, they even then, even though they could manifest that way, they may manifest in a way that will be more suitable for the environment. That makes sense.
Maharaj, you know, but Prabhupada always says that those who are louder, Prabhupada, he says that those who are, how Krishna says, yadat achyati shreshtas, whatever they do. So, if these qualities are there, wouldn't it be an added advantage? Like, it would help in making people more convinced rather than opposite?
It depends. You want, means you want people to become attracted, but you want them to become attracted for the right purpose. Right? Because otherwise, if Prabhupada manifested a very, very, very celestial form, then it would be very attractive. So many people would become attractive, but they wouldn't want to listen to it. They wouldn't want to know, well, how did you get such, you know, where did you get that, you know, those eyes or that skin, what do you use, you know? It's like, what you're using, what's cream, what's the secret of your, you know, that's what they'd be interested in. They wouldn't be interested necessarily in what message he had to give. You know? Therefore, then it's better to appear in a form that will get that done.
Srila Prabhupada expressed that when they tell us, why don't you show some mystic power like the other city? He said, if I show that, then people come just for that.
Yeah, it's cheap. There was, I think, was Shamananda or... Shamananda or Rasikananda, one of them, they were sitting on the wall, you know. Sometimes you have a wall, and it's outside it's high, but inside the dirt's raised, so it's not very high to the edge. So it's sometimes a common pastime to sit on that wall. You crouch on the wall and you brush your teeth, and you know, you see them in the morning sometimes and go.
This was Rasikananda.
Yeah, see, like you go on the parikram in the morning, and we're walking by at 6 in the morning. All the villagers are out on the path brushing their teeth, watching what's going on, you know? Like that. So it's a common thing. So Rasikananda, then he was sitting on the wall brushing his teeth, and suddenly this devotee comes running up and says, oh, in the middle of the town, there's this yogi there, and he's doing this and that, and he's taking an old branch and he's flying around, and you gotta come and see this. And then Rasi said, no, who wants to see this? No, you gotta see, it's such a special thing. Went on and on and on and on, trying to convince him in different ways how, you know, it's such a great thing and he should come and see, and how often do you see a guy flying around on a stick and this and that. And after a while, then Rasikananda got a little annoyed. So he took the stick out of his mouth, put it underneath him, flew around a bit, came back to the wall, put the thing back in his mouth, and says, I'm not going, you know. You know, so then, you know, they can do, but they don't manifest, because people just for amusement, you know, like you go to an amusement park, you go to Disneyland, or you go to, you know, it's just, you'll have about that much value. So it's
people also watch, they train animals to do tricks like that. Dolphins to jump through fire hoops.
Yeah,
so that's another thing to see.
Yeah, just one more thing to see. I mean, see Jesus, right? For what he taught, how many followed? Very few. What is he known for? You know, big things, what he did. You know, he took one loaf of bread and fed thousands of people. You know, took a blind man and brought back his, you know, eyesight. You know, somebody was dying of fever, and just by faith, when they were brought back to life, these things. It was all, you know. So that's what he's known for, like that. His teachings, how many even know his teachings? You know, probably very few really know. The theologians, yes. But theologians aren't the ones you see on the street. Theologians aren't the ones that are managing the church, you know. They're not the ones preaching. They sit and they study the books. You know? So it's not a, it's just a faith in some, they don't even know why. What do you do, you know? Why? They can't say.
Because I'm Polish.
Huh?
Because I'm Polish.
Because you're Polish.
That's why I have to be Catholic.
Oh, I see. Yes, because you're Polish.
Why are you Hare Krishna? You're Polish. I always ask that.
Why are Hare Krishna? You're Polish. Yes. It's hard to tell me. Yes. Polish are also not banned from being Hare Krishnas. They can also...
Polish the soul.
Polish the soul. Yes, that's it. You have to polish the soul. Or polishing the soul. That's funny. Yeah, especially, I guess, since the Pope's Polish. So.
Yeah, that's also more just
family tradition. Okay, Yadav Das, you have said that there are two kinds of devotees. Please describe them more clearly so even intelligent persons like myself can understand. Ananta Das, the devotees are of two kinds, one, householder devotees, and two, devotees who have renounced householder life. Yadav Das, what is the situation of a householder devotee in the material world? Please kindly explain this. Ananta Das, the word householder does not mean one who builds a house. Rather, the word means a person who accepts a wife and stays with her in a house. A devotee in this situation is called a householder devotee. A soul bound in the prison of the illusory potency Maya enters the material world through the doors of the five knowledge-acquiring senses. Through the door of the eyes, he sees forms and colors. Through the door of the ears, he hears sounds. Through the door of the nose, he smells fragrances. Through the door of the skin, he touches. Through the door of the tongue, he tastes. Entering the material world through these five doors, the soul becomes attached to the world. As he becomes attached to the material world, the soul goes farther and farther from Sri Krishna, the Lord of the heart. That is why the material world is called the external world. They who are mad after enjoying the material world are called hedonists. The householder devotees of the Lord are not eager to please his senses. It's interesting here. It's called the external world because you view it through the external senses. And the internal world, and the spiritual world, then is viewed through the heart, like that. The householder devotees of the Lord are not eager to please their senses. Therefore, they are not like the hedonists. For a householder devotee, his wife is the maidservant of Lord Krishna. His sons and daughters are also the servants of Lord Krishna. When, with his eyes, he sees the deity form of the Lord, or the form of things related to Lord Krishna, the householder devotee becomes happy. When, with his ears, he hears topics of Lord Krishna, or the biographies of the great devotees, the householder devotees become happy. When, with his nose, he smells the tulsi leaves and fragrances offered to Lord Krishna, the householder devotee becomes filled with bliss. With his tongue, the householder devotee tastes the holy names of Lord Krishna and the remnants of food offered to Lord Krishna. When, with his skin, he touches the feet of the Lord's devotees, the householder devotee becomes happy. His hopes, actions, desires, hospitality, and service to the deity are all used in the service of the Lord. His entire life is a great festival of 1. Mercy to others, 2. The holy name of the Lord, and 3. Service to Vaishnavas. In this way, a devotee householder remains aloof from hedonism. In the age of Kali, it is very appropriate that the individual souls become householder Vaishnavas. In that way, there is no fear that they will fall down. Also, by following this path, one may attain the full perfection of devotional service. Many self-realized Vaishnava spiritual masters are householders. Their children are also pure devotees. In this way, association with householder devotees of the Lord is especially beneficial to the souls in this world. So he's making the materialist enters the material world through the senses because he sees the material world through the senses. But the devotees, they use their senses to see Krishna. Therefore, they're not like the materialists. And then these three points, mercy to others, the holy name of Lord Krishna, and service to the Vaishnavas. Then these things are you know, how you say, the festivals of the householders. Let me say something. Okay, any questions on this? Sometimes we spoke in other sections so much on this, and when we get to where it talks about this, nothing to say. Yadavidas. Householder Vaishnavas are naturally under the control of the smarta pundits. If the Vaishnavas try to be independent of them, there is trouble. In this situation, how is it possible to engage in pure devotional service? Anantadas. For marrying off sons and daughters, for performing funeral rites, and for a few other rituals, it may be necessary to engage smarta pundits. Still, there is no need to engage them for the spiritual activities that are most dear to the heart. Look, for maintaining the material body, all are dependent on others. Even they who proudly think themselves independent are in truth still dependent on others. When one suffers from disease, he must take medicine. When one is hungry, he must eat food. To ward off the cold, one must accept clothing. Because of the sun, rain, and other difficulties, one must build a house. For these and many other things, one needs to maintain his material body. One must depend upon others. To be independent is merely, as far as possible, to limit these situations of depending on others. The truth is, however, that no one can be completely independent and still maintain his material body. So to be independent as far as possible is good and helpful for devotional service. If one observes all these previously described rituals in relation to Lord Krishna, then there is no fault in observing them. For example, if marriage is accepting only to beget good children and worship the Prajapati, but also to engage one's wife and family in devotional service to Lord Krishna, then household life is favorable for devotional service. Let the materialists, the Vedic priests and others say what they will, one still attains the spiritual benefit of these devotional activities. On the Shraddha day, one should first worship Lord Krishna, offer the remnants of that offering as pindit to his ancestors, and then feed the Brahmana Vaishnavas. These activities are favorable for a householder's devotional service. Then these smarter rituals may be performed in context of devotional service. Then they are not at all unfavorable to pure devotional service. Ordinary activities should be done with a sense of detachment and renunciation. Yeah, this jnana and vairag, you see, that's mentioned. By performing service, then that is the result, one of the results, jnana and vairag. Because jnana and vairag then will give liberation like that. So it mentions that there's one class of devotees is taking up, becoming intelligent. The second class wants to be liberated. So these are the symptoms, this jnana and vairag, of those who are in the process of becoming liberated. Those who are liberated go beyond jnana and vairag, because you're giving up some, you don't need to give up the material world because you're not part of the material world. So therefore, it's not a process of giving up because you don't have anything there. See, Sukadeva Goswami doesn't have to go through the process of renunciation. He just doesn't accept anything of the world, so therefore there's nothing to renounce. Like that. And then knowledge, they have then proper understanding. Yeah. So detachment and renunciation. Detachment means is that you have attachment, so you're trying to detach yourself, and you have things and you give them up. Right? Renunciation then means you have something and then you give that away. Like that. So that's different. Tyag is different from sannyas. Right? Tyag means you perform activities that will get you results, then you give them away. So that's renunciation. Sannyas means you don't perform the activities that get results. Right? Means you do a business and then you get results of the business, money, profit. Then that profit you take and then give for the deities, for the preaching, to the Vaishnavas. That's called renunciation. Sannyas means you don't do the business, so therefore you don't get the money. You understand? It's a different thing. But so for the devotee, also then taking it a step further, I mean that's the gross. Everybody can understand that. The subtle is if you're performing the activity for Krishna, whatever you're doing, it's sannyas. Because you're not performing the business for getting money for yourself. You're performing the business to get money for Krishna. Like that. It's already Krishna's money. It's not our money that we're going to use for Krishna. It's Krishna's money. Though we may organize it and manage it. But it's not our money. This is not words. This is real, actual realization. That's sannyas. So therefore one could be sannyas in any varna or ashram, if one has that mentality. But socially then, those who are in the sannyas ashram, generally you would see, wouldn't do those things that in material life would be considered means of gaining profit. Right? Gaining profit, maintaining profit, like that. Because then others will think that he has money and I am endeavoring to have money, or have money. I use my money like this, so he must be using his money also in the same way. So to make it look obviously different, therefore, then there's a need of, you know, the grihasthas, they have all opulence, and the sannyasis walk around, you know, with holes in their socks. Because then the householders and then will say, ah, so renounced, you know. But that's not the actual. It means, you know, you could have holes with socks and be very attached to them, you know, like that. The grihastha has holes with socks and they're not attached to those pair of socks. They have other socks they're very attached to. But the sannyasi has holes with socks. They're the only socks he has, so he's very attached to them. So, therefore, it's not a real judge, but it makes the mind of the common, you know, person happy, like that. Like I mentioned in the beginning, to build a house and live in a house is not a definition of a householder. To live with a woman in a house, that's called a householder. So therefore, even the sannyasi builds a house, he's not a householder. But if they do it, the householder will think, hey, that's the same as me. But there's a difference, because the sannyasi living in the house, it'll be used totally different than the grihastha living in the house. You know? But because it will generally create, for those who are on the first platform of becoming intelligent, the kanisthas who are attached to the results of their work, then for them, then the sannyasis traditionally shouldn't keep anything or signs of opulence. Because then such devotees then will misunderstand and will think badly. Like that. So therefore, then traditionally the sannyas ashram looks very renounced, the grihastha ashram looks very opulent, like this. You know, the vanaprastha ashram is very austere, like that. You know, so it's very obvious, you know. It's like, you don't have to be intelligent to see the difference. Well, to see the difference between a sannyasi living in a house and a grihastha living in a house, you actually have to be intelligent. You know, or to tell the difference between a grihastha who's on the path of sakam and a grihastha who's on the path of nishkam, because it'll look the same. They're both performing the duties of the household or life, which will create material opulence. But to be able to tell the difference, you know, therefore in the Vedic age, the Brahmins were very simple, the kings were very opulent, you know, the Vaishyas were as opulent as they could get, you know. Like this. The Brahmins were very, you know, renounced in that. So then people would happily give them something.
Right. Can you say something about jnana prayasa?
Jnana prayasa. It means over endeavor for knowledge. Prayas means like, I think it means like foaming at the mouth. It may be in one of the pavarga, material world is pavarga, so I think pa means prayasa, means, you know, over endeavor. So jnana prayasa means reading so many books, trying to get the knowledge, trying to figure it out, trying to everything like this. That's jnana prayasa. Because the point is Krishna is not to be figured out. You'll never figure out Krishna. Like that. You know, it's like, if you can't tie him up, how you'll figure him out? If you can't tie him up with a rope, how you'll tie him with your intelligence. So he can't be figured out. He reveals himself. So therefore, the process of hearing and chanting about Krishna, that's the service. Like that. And you try to, you know, as best of your ability, understand. But you understand it's not your intelligence that you understood it. It's by Krishna's mercy that we understand what's going on. If we think, I have understood this, I have figured it out, then Krishna at some point will kind of have to make us understand that that's not the situation. He will, you know, in some way make us look foolish. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was very strong on this. There's that story of some big, I think, Brahmin pundit, very big intellectual, you know, famously kind of intellectual person, very educated, came to the mutt, and he was very proud, it was obvious, he was proud of his intelligence. So then he came to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur because he'd heard he's a big pundit and all that, and, you know, good family, and, you know, so many things. So then he wanted to discuss with him. So he says, oh, these questions, no, you should, the right person for you, and he names some devotee. Says, you go learn from him, ask him, he can actually explain to you these questions. So then he happily went out, but he's been directed towards somebody, so he's expecting to find some, you know, big intellectual and big pundit. And he asked the devotees, where is this one devotee that was mentioned? They kept pointing, oh, that side. So he went down that side, until finally he got down to the Goshala. When he got to the Goshala, he asked for this devotee, and they said, okay, we'll get him. And they went and got him. And then this person came back, you know, basically covered from head to foot with cow dung. Because what he did was just shovel the cow dung and clean the Goshala. And, you know, when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted him to hear from him, because he had a good service attitude. So he actually knew the perfection of knowledge was to engage in Krishna's service. So this man was not overly impressed with who he had been sent to. I'm not sure if he understood the point or if he went away, but in any case, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was not so enthused about, you know, just
wasting
those
time.
Yeah, wasting time. Also in the Devananda Gaudiya Math, Keshav Maharaj, when he established the temple and the kitchen and the book distribution, all these things, he gave it all different names. And that, and the where the toilets are, he calls that Gyanakanda, or something like that. That's the place of, you know, just
meditation.
Yeah. For materialistic knowledge, you know, that's like over at the toilet. You know, that was so. Someone said, you know, they have service in the, you know, in the Gyanakanda, meant they were cleaning the toilets that day.
You have
realization.
Yeah. About the material world.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Besides that, it's, you know, everybody's, the essence of everyone's beauty and everything is to be found there. Ordinary activities should be done with a sense of detachment and renunciation. Spiritual activities should be performed in the association of devotees. But then one will not be at fault. Yes, so ordinary activities are done with a sense of detachment and renunciation. They must be done, but they're done with that mood. And then spiritual activities we do in the association of devotees. So that way then the positive activities we do in the other activities. Those activities for freeing ourselves from the material world, those are done in a sense of detachment and renunciation, because that's what they're for. The duties of household life and all the things of varnashram are meant to free us from conditioned life. So therefore, if they're not done in the mood of detachment and renunciation, they won't give that. Because it's the mood that gives that makes everything work. If the mood is right, then that's the kind of result you'll get. The mood sets your goal. Look, most of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's personal associates were householder devotees. From time without beginning, many great Rajarshis, saintly kings, and Devarshis, divine sages, were householder devotees. Dhruva Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj, the Pandavas, and many others were all householders. Householder devotees of the Lord are worshipped by all in the world. Yadavidas. If householder devotees are so worshipable and qualified to attain all spiritual love, then why do some devotees renounce householder life? Anantadas. Among the householder devotees, for some it is appropriate to renounce householder life. However, in the material world, the number of these devotees is very small, and association with them is very rare. Yadavidas. What makes a man qualified to renounce household life? Anantadas. Human beings have two kinds of activities, external activities and two internal activities. In the language of the Vedas, these activities are called parak and pratyak. When a pure spiritual soul forgets its original spiritual form, misidentifies himself as a subtle material body of mind, intelligence, and ego, and exits through the door of the material senses, he becomes attracted to the material world of material sense objects. These are called external activities. Interesting thing here is because we just think, yeah, I'm just here, I'm just moving in this world, this is me, it's all happening and everything. But it's interesting, he identifies himself, misidentifies himself with the subtle body. And then that subtle body collects around itself a gross body, the senses. In the Gita, it doesn't talk about it, or, you know, the other thing, it talks about the senses, the view of the body from the senses. Then, through the senses, you perceive everything. It's actually what we know of the world, it's what we see, what we hear, smell, touch, taste. That's how we say, that's me. You know, so it's a very interesting approach to the whole thing. Because we just think, yeah, I'm here, but we're here through the senses. Mm. You know, that's how we're here. That's how we're telling. But we're so used to it, we don't think. We just think of it in the normal way. So that's us. But actually, we're identifying with the subtle body, and then the subtle body then makes the gross body, which we view the world like that. So he says, exits through means from the mind and all that. You exit through the senses. Like that. So very interesting, right? When the direction is reversed and the soul goes from the immaterial sense objects to the mind and then to the original form of the soul, then these are called internal activities. As long as the desire to perform external activities is strong, one should stay in the association of devotees and without offense perform these external activities, with the idea that this material world is Lord Krishna's property. By thus taking shelter of devotional service to Lord Krishna, in a very short time the external direction of one's activities becomes reversed, and one's activities are then directed inward. When one is thus fully engaged in internal spiritual activities, he becomes qualified to renounce householder life. So it's by the living entity has becoming conditioned, has put himself in this direction of coming into the material world. And so then that means, and that culminates in moving or entering into this material world through the senses. So therefore the senses then are engaged in the sense objects. That's the grihastha life. The senses are offered into the fire of the sense objects. That's what the Gita mentions. So then, by doing that, but understanding that it is Krishna's property, right? If you think it's our property, it'll just take us deeper and deeper into Maya. If we understand it's Krishna's property, because it's somebody else's, we'll deal with it as it belongs to someone else. And then, from that, one will become purified, and then it becomes reversed. And then from the senses, then we look inward, and then from there to the soul. So it's a good process if one understands how to use it. But that detachment and renunciation is the proper thing. There's sometimes an idea that, you know, the brahmachari, the vanaprastha, sannyas are very detached, and the grihasthas are just, you know, wholesale, you know, complete madhouse sense enjoyers, you know. Like this, Brahmins are totally renounced, kshatriyas are just completely into sense gratification. Sometimes we get this perception of the whole varnashram system. But actually it's not. The whole foundation is based on what is learned as a brahmachari. The brahmachari learns control of the senses, cleanliness, respect of elders, you know, service, performance of menial service, study of the scriptures, they learn knowledge, transcendental knowledge. So this is the foundation for the grihastha, the vanaprastha, and the sannyas. So it's all of four of them are based on the same principles. It's just a matter of whether one is in the position of seriously engaging the senses and the external activities, and in that way serving Krishna, because the activities are Krishna's, the energy is Krishna's, it's being done for Krishna, the results for Krishna. Or it has come to the point where it is reversing, and then one is taking it the other way. From the senses, that goes to the mind, to the soul. And so then he sees things of the world, that reminds him of, you know, all these things, the modes of nature, how they're working in that. You see something, and then you see, oh, that is this mode, that is that mode, that is this working in the material world, or that working in, you know, the doer, the not, the soul, the endeavor, you know, the place, the senses, the, you know, the objects, the super soul. You're seeing it in relation to those, all those aspects described in the Bhagavad Gita. Then from that, then the impersonalist will stop there. But then the devotee takes it further, that this is being done to please Krishna. Same way, as material energy is Krishna, so using it for engaging the senses must be done for Krishna. Because it's Krishna's senses and Krishna's sense objects. The other is also this intellectual has to be being done for Krishna, because it's also the mind belongs to Krishna, the intelligence. Material energy that you're observing belongs to Krishna. So then it goes internal. And then from there, you take it to the soul, that, you know, to the point of that, you know, it's being done to please Krishna. You detach yourself from here to bring us to the transcendental platform. You know, if we only see the technical workings of the world, so it's only on the intellectual and mental platform, then that will get us to the liberated state, but it won't get us prema. Unless you can take it to the next stage, that will take us to prema. Like that. Yes.
You spoke about reversing. But even in the reverse, you spoke about reversing the process and going back. Uh-huh. Even the reversing process, doesn't it actually begin with the mind, so that you're using the mind to...
Yes, but the mind is using the senses. The mind is focused on the senses. When you're reversing the process, the mind isn't focused on the senses. The mind uses the senses, but it's not focused on the senses. Right? Does that make some sense?
But doesn't it begin with the mind? So how
it may begin with the mind, but that doesn't mean it's the same thing. Right? You know what I'm saying? Just because it starts with the same, it's not the same. You know? That's the difference, is that it may be the same, but it doesn't mean that it's the same process. It says you enter the world through the senses. So to understand the senses is your purview, and that's what you identify with them. But that all that has to be taken back into the mind. The mind has to sift through all what the senses bring in, decide what's important. Then of that, access the memory and figure out what was the previous information on that. Was it good or bad? Or what's the previous experience? Because the mind is business is to make a decision. Intelligence's purpose is to make differentiation. Right? It means for a materialist, if he can't tell the difference between a tree and a woman, he'll have a lot of problem. Right? So he has to, you know, he sees a nice shapely tree, then, you know, he will focus, you know, of all the things that he sees, then he'll choose the tree out of all that. Then he'll go into the memory, and then what things had that kind of a shape and bark and leaves and flowers and all that, and it'll come back tree, you know, And then, you know, if you want to pick flowers or like that, great, you know, but if you were looking for a woman, then that's not it. So then the mind will either accept that for flowers or reject it as a woman. You understand? That's how the mind will function. So it's there, but the purview is completely through the senses. You perceive through the senses, your enjoyments are through the senses, the endeavors are through the senses. You know what I'm saying? You may be experiencing on the platform the mind, but the whole field of activity is the senses, you know. Right? You're patting your kid on the head, you know, and enjoying that interaction. That in the feeling of the enjoyment is coming in the mind, but the field is the senses, like that. Understand? That's it. Well, when you do it the other way, you may see things with the senses, but then that triggers to the mind on the spiritual. So the field is the mind, and then you take the field to the soul, like that. Right? Does that make sense?
Right. Does that indicate that those in the renounced
situated the second and the touch of the third, because they understand that the soul
is more intellectual.
Yeah, it'll be more intellectual. So they'll move from the mind more to the intelligence. So they get closer to the soul. Well, the non-devotee householders, there will be, you know, the senses is their field. Though they want to. So the idea of the Vedic culture is even the grihastha thing is brought to the platform, is trying to keep it within the realm of the mind. Senses are there, that's the field. But dealing with that field, you only deal according to religious principles. So therefore the heavy experience is on the mental platform, not on the sensual platform. So it is the interaction between people that becomes more important based on religious principles. So the experience then is deeper, like that. If it deals just on the senses, then the experience is very shallow. But with the mind it's deeper. Though the field still is the senses. Well, then, for the renunciate, it's supposed to be that they take it to the fields, not the senses anymore. It's more the intelligence, and then the soul. Does that make any sense? Yeah. So
on the platform of Krishna consciousness, then what's the difference? It's just a question of personal taste, whether you remain in the renunciation or again.
It's more a matter of need. If where the one's personal needs lie, you know, if one is feeling that, you know, I have to take care of the real me, you know, and do what I want to do, then that person is better off as a householder, because those needs are only going to be fulfilled through the senses.
But only Krishna conscious.
But Krishna conscious, then mentioned before, is that the Krishna conscious householder then is working in the mood of detachment in that. So these things, those desires are there, but they keep them in control. And according to religious principles, engage in those according to the direction of how Krishna wants, because they're Krishna's objects in the senses. Krishna's senses, Krishna's objects. So then in that detached mode, then they also perform nishkam karma yoga. Like that. Though the emphasis may be more on the karma and less on the jnana, but it's not necessarily. It means the activities must be there, but they may be very advanced in jnana, like that. And so what you'll see externally is generally they'll do everything very, very properly, like that. But they won't be attached to the results. They're attached, they just simply are, it's Krishna, so they do their best to get Krishna a good result. Right? The businessman is doing business, and he understands his business belongs to Krishna, he still has to do the business nicely, because now it's Krishna's business. Before he was doing business nicely because it's his business. But now he does it nicely because it's Krishna's business. Like that. So then therefore he's very careful that whatever money comes is used properly according to how Krishna would like to see it used. Does that make some sense? So So therefore, within the platform of nivritti, then you can have both the renunciates and the grihasthas. But on the platform of pravritti, then one should only have grihasthas. That. So ideally, the Daigavarna Ashram, as he's explaining it here, then is on the platform of nivritti. So householders means that they're renounced. Still, their field of activity is the senses, while the field of activities for the renunciate will be subtle body. It will be the internal direction rather than the external. But the grihastha, by performing those external activities, it will automatically reverse the process if their goal is to go back to Godhead. It will automatically. Therefore, at some point, then you will see that that internal process becomes very much part of the grihastha's life. And so then when that becomes, you know, complete, then that's the natural time for it. If it's favorable, then they'll take up renunciation. If it's not necessary, then they don't have to. Vanaprastha will be sufficient. Is that?
It may also be that the householder understands his conditioned nature.
Mm.
So his goal is renunciation and pure love of God. But understanding his conditioned nature, he realizes that to achieve that state of renunciation, he has to go using the thorn to take out the thorn, so to speak.
Yes. And that's the grihastha that he's talking about here, that's on the platform of Nishkam Karma Yoga, is because the internal process is part of it. He understands, he identifies with, he sees that he does identify with the subtle body, and but at the same time as he wants to engage that in Krishna's service. So therefore, then that becomes progressive. So such a householder, one doesn't make so much distinction between such a householder and the sannyasis in the way of their, you know, purpose. Still socially, of course, you know, just like there's an older person and a younger person. They're both devotees, but still socially one makes a distinction between the children and the adults.
You were saying how some are operating in the field of the senses and I didn't fully catch the point, because as I understand it, all pleasure, even sensual pleasure, is only experienced on according to one's mental state.
Mm-hmm.
For example, one may think that an apple is very juicy and tasty, and his, you know, saliva is there, his desire to enjoy the thing is there. Maybe he's even experienced some pleasure that he'll get it. Maybe it's more anticipation. But then when he bites into it and, I don't know, there's a worm. Maybe this example's not so good.
The point is then, but it's the mind that feels it.
The mind, yeah.
No, but he's seeing the identification goes down to that field.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, his pleasure and pain is dependent upon the field.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the external activities, because he enters the world through that.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore his dealing in the world is dependent upon that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the internal world means the enjoyments is, of course, also felt by the mind and all that, but it's not in the field of the senses. You perceive things with the senses, then intellectualize it, and the enjoyment is there. The enjoyment is the perception of that material world as a place of misery, or this or that, or seeing how the modes of nature are working, like that. So the field is different, like that. Though you're dealing with it, still you have the soul, the subtle body, the gross body. You're not going to get away, but it's just where the field is. You know, so like for the liberated soul, the field is the soul. The subtle body, the gross body, aren't part of their field at all. The Sukadeva Goswami just moves around. The modes of nature take care of his body. However, it's supposed to be taken care of. He doesn't make any endeavor to take care of it. You know, because it's not, he doesn't identify with it. He's in that, but he doesn't take care of it. That makes some sense. Okay.
Also, when you mentioned it, we perceive that we are here because we have the senses. Otherwise, we would not know where we are. This is the new scientific way with the visual reality. Through visual reality, people can transport to even 3D worlds, even only utilizing the ears and the sight.
But it's still, it's...
They identified it with something that they experienced.
Oh man, how can this thing work?
It's like if you're on a... If someone's on a train and they feel someone pushing against them, they think it's a beautiful woman or a...
Yeah, you do something, it won't even write. Is this a write, read-only program or something? You did something, then why it won't write?
It's an old man. Before they were experiencing bodily transformations, but when I... See what it is. It all stops. It's
about the lines. It's a subtle thing because that's just what is you're dealing with is these three phases of existence. But it's just which level is the prominent? You know? So because we are working through the senses, then if we want to make that proper, then we must, because the mind accepts and rejects, but it'll accept and reject based on some reference point. You know, reference point is necessary. Therefore, that's why it always checks with the memory, the mind, to see if there's any previous, you know, something to refer to. So now, if that reference point is simply sensual or simply speculative, then it's not progressive because it can change and therefore you can never actually move forward. When you do what you want to do, then what we want to do changes, so it's not progressive. It'll never be progressive. It can't make one happy, it's never made anyone happy. But if the reference point is Krishna's directions, then the mind can be, it will accept and reject the field of the senses, but based on religious principles, based on something progressive. Then that becomes the proper platform for viewing through the senses, you know, entering this world through the senses. Because then you don't do something that's against the religious principles, that's against Krishna consciousness. You know? His point is that reference point is who makes the reference point. Means, do we accept that God makes it, or are we proud and think we make it? You know, if we're proud of our own perceptions and mind and everything like that, then we put our faith in material energy. And, you know, and so, and then the pride, the ego becomes inflated because my perception and my values and my direction are what's good. While the devotee is humble, because it's Krishna's reference point. And so by Krishna's reference point, Krishna's standards, then I engage my life according to that. So therefore the results, the activities, the results are coming by Krishna. Everything's Krishna. Krishna's just in his pastime letting me take part in his pastime. The modes of nature are going to interact. So now I can take part in that and use it for Krishna. Therefore it becomes devotional service. Or I can take part by being proud and think, yes, I'm the doer in all this, and I'm fulfilling my desires, and then when we get to be an old man, then we'll figure out that we didn't fulfill anything, and we were fools. Like that. So that's what we see in the songs of Bhaktivinoda Thakura. I was proud of my education and birth, and, you know, went around, and people thought I was this and that, and I became so absorbed, and I was fulfilling my desires and doing all the things. I had my house, my children, my wealth, my position, my all these things. I did all the things that is the me, I, what I want, the real me, taking care of, you know, the real needs. And then he's an old man, nothing works, his senses don't work, no one cares for old men. All those children and wives and dogs and cats and, you know, how you say, parakeets and whatever else you got. When you get old, they don't care. They just don't care. You know? And so then you realize now I've wasted my time. But that time is a little late. That's why then one is to take it up early, so then one can go through that without that mistake. He starts off understanding that, yes, I'm not going to be happy here anyway. If someone's a devotee, means they've already done all these things. I mean, what do the senses have to offer here? What is available now that's even of any good standard? Right? Nowadays you've got to buy some cheap perfume. Before you used musk and these other things. You can't even buy them nowadays. You can't buy them. They're just not available. And if they are available, then unless you're, you know, a sheikh from the Middle East, you can't afford it. You know?
Musk is illegal.
Yeah, musk is illegal. So if there is some, we're not going to see it. Guys that will pay, you know, thousands of dollars for a few drops, and they do. You go to these big guys that sell the really serious oils, and they say their big customers are the sheikhs in the Middle East. They buy all the aguru and musk and all these things. Like that, the locals around here aren't buying. You know? So I mean, well, what is here some standard? You know, there's nothing here. The quality of the food's not so good, you know. Everything. What is good? And we're so proud that we have something to enjoy. You know? So therefore then, you know, at one point we'll understand. But the idea is if we understand at a younger age, then we engage ourselves to the best of our ability, in the way that we can, how we can, but seeing that it's Krishna's property and Krishna's thing. Krishna wants it done like this. Krishna wants a householder in this particular, you know, situation to be prosperous by these methods. And to use that prosperity in these particular ways. And then it's the duty to do that. Right? The householder has to take care of the wife, has to take care of the children, has to take care of the house and the bills. It's the duty. So, and he's supposed to do that not in just a cheap way, but in a way that's proper. So that means it will look exactly the same, if not even better, than someone who is simply engaging, inspired because of their own material needs. It'll look exactly the same. But there will be a difference. The one is pure and the other's not. The other's entangling, while the one, seeing it as Krishna's, is purifying. That grihastha will become liberated. The other will become entangled. Because he understands, I'm not the body. I'm not the mind in that. Okay, it's my duty to take care of this body and mind, but how am I going to take care? Right? What is the level of me? Right? The real me. What is the level? According to what standard? Right? The real me goes from completely gross, sinful, disgusting animal up to, you know, probably a nice guy. Right? So which one of those are you going to pick? Right? It's a big variety. You know, one man could do so many things from very sinful to very pious. The same person. Which one does he choose? Just which way the wind's blowing or?
The modes.
Yeah, it'll just be the modes. So when we say me, then it just means me, the way the modes have identified myself today. You know, tomorrow it'll be different. So then, therefore, we have to set a standard, and Krishna gives a standard. Then we know, okay, of all these me's, then this one's proper, and all the other ones, you know, should be left. So then you take that, and then, okay, then it's my duty, since these are the needs, to engage that particular identity in Krishna's service. Then one is purified. Otherwise, it's a complete circus. Philosophize as one may, endeavor as one may, the satisfaction is guaranteed. The material world is dissatisfaction or your money back.
Yes.
You know? Guaranteed.
Guaranteed.
Lifetime warranty. Right? Like that. Guaranteed dissatisfaction. Like that. Yes.
You said that the mind and the intelligence and the false ego are in the heart, and always is mentioned that there are weakness of the heart, or knowledge is revealed in the heart. what does it mean actually? Is this the soul or all together with the mind and the whole and everything?
It means it's all, there's a situation called the citta. Mm-hmm. It's in the middle, it's not the heart muscle. The heart muscle is close to that. That's why it's close to it, because it gets energy from that. Because the soul is situated in the middle. Therefore, when all the blood and everything comes through the heart, it picks up the consciousness from the soul. Like that. So it gets all its energy in there. That's why when one is in the mind, one is enlivened, then so much energy is there. And when one is not, then no energy is there. So it's everything is picked up from there. So it's in the heart. It means that you have the life airs, and there is the soul. So then moving with the soul is the consciousness of the soul, which is a central feature. Based on that, then you'll manifest a subtle body. Because if we're the enjoyer and controller, then we manifest a subtle body. And then that subtle body will make the gross. But if we give up the idea that I'm the controller and enjoyer, then that will manifest the spiritual body. You know, because it develops the spiritual mind and spiritual intelligence and spiritual identity. Like that.
One chooses the identity of, like you say, in that range, of what shall I be? According to the mind, so then you choose I'm going to be. So you've got the four things, eight sections, right? Roughly to choose.
Yeah.
And, that the act will automatically you'll come to the mode of goodness. That because is it that when you act in the different modes, then the mode of ignorance is harder. It's more exhausting because you're using more, you're more of the whole grosser and grosser senses, and the mode of goodness is. It's not so hard work, so you become peaceful. But ultimately, it's actually the consciousness, isn't it?
Right.
So, what does it matter how you really go through life?
There's the modes of nature control everything. So, it's not that, you know, goodness is good, passion is bad, and ignorance is worse. If the consciousness is in these modes, that's bad. But the modes of nature is just like you go into the kitchen, you want to cook. No, that you are in there cooking and something's going on, that must be controlled by passion. You're taking the knife and cutting up the potato, that's ignorance. Ignorance is destroying the shape of the potato. Like that. But at the same time, passion is then creating new shapes. And then, because you're doing it for, you know, proper purposes, then that's goodness. So they're always going on. So it's a matter of where the consciousness is. So if the consciousness is situated in goodness, then the activities, though they may be controlled by the modes of nature according to one's conditioned nature, then they're purifying, they're elevating. So it doesn't matter if one's engaging the activities of Shudra or a Brahman in this process, they're all going to be purifying. Like that. Because you're doing it according to Krishna's directions for his pleasure.
The consciousness is beautiful.
So the consciousness is the most essential. That's why we always focus on that. If you change the consciousness, you change the makeup of the subtle body. And that changes in the gross body. Yeah. So the consciousness is always the focus. But so that one is aware and, you know, tries to change one's consciousness, then we see is that we work through, in general, we work through the senses, through the gross. We teach how to engage the senses in Krishna's service. Like that. That's a Hrishikesha Hrishikenam Sevanam Bhakti Uchate. By that process of engaging the senses, we're elevated, we're uplifted, purified. So that's there, because that will then start the internal process. So automatic doesn't mean, generally we take nowadays automatic, because at least in the present age, ignorance is like of high value. You know, the more ignorant you can look, then the more, it's like you see the people, you know, like the models, when they model things, they look tough and this and that. You know, you go to Vrindavan and you look at the monkeys. You go by sometime and sit and look at a monkey. Look a monkey right in the eye. And then you see what's their reaction. They just kind of... You know, and that's exactly what nowadays is considered, that's cool. You know, this guy's cool. He's together. It's
New
just...
York.
It's just, huh?
New Yorker.
Yeah, it's just pure mode of ignorance. You know?
It's pure.
Yeah, that's the thing, it's pure. So therefore, that's what's attractive. Things that are pure are attractive, you know? Like little kids are pure, they're attractive. You know? Like that. So it's just ignorance. So I've got off so much into the tangent and missed the point. Let's see.
Of the modes.
Yeah. But it was something about how ignorance being valuable and goodness not being. But I can't remember what was the thread.
The modes are not really bad or good.
Yeah.
The conscience is good.
Oh, I think it was something about which one you're using. Is that that's so then
what means automatic?
Oh, automatic, that was it, yeah. So automatic, so because of the idea that automatic is, because the culture is based on ignorance, so automatic means no work. It happens without you working, right? The washing machine, it does without you working, right? They don't tell you, they don't remind you about the water bill you have to pay, the electric bill you have to pay, the repairs that you have to pay, and the money you had to pay to buy it in the first place. That was a lot of work. Just that you don't spend time in the kitchen washing the dishes, right? It means if you had washed the dishes yourself, you wouldn't have had to go out and spend your time in the job getting a repairman and doing all these other things. So you don't do any less work, it's just where you put the work. So automatically the idea is I do nothing. I sit back, it just happens. But the Vedic automatic doesn't mean that. It probably gives like examples. When you eat, you don't have to separately endeavor to get rid of your hunger. By eating, it automatically goes away. Right? So that means process is followed. Otherwise, doing nothing, that's ignorance. So activity must be there. It's the nature of the soul. So we perform the devotional activities. We do it to try to please Krishna. Automatically then, detachment, the internal process is awoken, love of God is awoken. This automatic doesn't mean that you're not doing the activities of it. Sometimes even devotees say, so we should cultivate this proper understanding of hearing and chanting and that, and then many will just say, no, it's just automatic. Prabhupada said it's automatic. It means I don't have to endeavor for it, I don't have to do nothing. Just one day a lightning bolt will hit me and I'll automatically be a pure devotee. But you have to have a goal. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur mentions in the purport to the to the Brahma Samhita, right? Is that if means how you hit the goal unless you know where it is. You shoot an arrow, you have to see that target, and there has to be that endeavor to hit the target. Then you get the goal. You're just saying, yeah, it just automatically happens. So I don't have to pick up the bow and arrow. I don't have to do nothing. It'll all happen. But something is being endeavored for. But then if that's the case, then just doing the preaching is also going to happen automatically. You know, and lunch will happen automatically, and, you know, washing the pots and making... Everything will happen, so I don't have to... I can just sit down and do nothing. But we have to endeavor. So the thing is endeavor is there, but the result will come automatic. If the process is proper, our goal is proper, our understanding is proper, then love of Godhead will come automatically. So therefore you can take any of the process, any of the varnas, any of the ashrams, and engage them in Krishna's service with the purpose of pleasing Him in a detached way, and it will automatically bring you to liberation and bring you to payment.
This automatic means that some people get pleased along the way and share the blessings on you.
That's all part of the process. It means in the process that is there, pleasing the Vaishnavas, pleasing the Lord.
Like, and then giving keys.
Yeah, I mean that can be observed through that way. Here we just meant automatic means it will happen, but it happens with endeavor. Right? It means there's a process of devotional service. You have a goal, you and have the proper situation, you're rightly situated, then that endeavor, if it's under the proper direction, will give the results. Then technically within that, then that's a big science. That's a big science. So much of that is in getting the blessings of the Vaishnavas.
Okay. In that endeavor, it says we automatically come to the mode of goodness. Would your activity in the normal way, in the organic way, after many births, you become a situated in the mode of goodness? It means, you know, peaceful. So if you take the devotional service, then as a byproduct, automatically you come to another goodness if you're taking to it sincerely. Mm. So would you want to change your activity or lifestyle?
Not necessarily. I mean, that will also naturally happen. I mean, everything has its, the gross and subtle body have a nature, and that is going to be, you can't get around that. But you can take the grosser end of it or the purified end of it, the clean or unclean. Like someone can be, let's say, very strong and assertive. So they could be the leader of a street gang and just give everybody trouble, or they could be a leader of, you know, a decent group of people. But that leadership ability is there, but how it'll be used, that's the... So there's no need to change that. If someone's a leader, they lead, but now they should lead amongst purified souls according to purified principles. Otherwise, they'll lead according to, you know, the street rules, you know, of unpurified people. But leading is going to be there. So that doesn't need to be changed. But you have to see, well, what is the, you know, the proper Krishna conscious method of that? You know, what is the proper aspect of religion that is to be engaged in Krishna service so that one is situated on the transcendental position?
It would seem that, for example, the sudra occupation itself is in the mode of ignorance, but the person himself could be in the mode of goodness.
That's the point. Because it's the gross and subtle body that are working, not the soul. The soul thinks they're the Shudra, but they're not the Shudra. The gross and subtle body is Shudra. Right? But so, therefore, that soul situated in Krishna consciousness, you know, or in the sadhak stage in goodness, endeavoring for that pure Krishna consciousness, then sees what is the, you know, best way, according to the situation, to engage in Krishna service. So even though it's working under the mode of ignorance, it doesn't mean that it's not going to purify him. The main thing is how it's connected. You know, that's the thing, is how you connect it. So but that's a very good point. Just like the cow, the body is in the mode of goodness, but the soul is in the mode of ignorance. Right? The soul in the cow's body thinks it's a cow.
Goodness.
Huh?
Ignorance.
Yeah, it means the soul's in ignorance because it thinks it's a cow. Like that. But the body is controlled by the modes of goodness, therefore it sleeps very little, only eats sattvic foods, likes to be very clean, very regulated. Like that. Gentle dealings, like this. But the soul is in ignorance. So in the same way as one can be situated in the body that's manifest from ignorance, and it one can be situated in goodness.
Maharaj,
he's in the body of a demon, Asura. Yeah, very good point. Bali Maharaj also. So many great personalities in the demon line. Very great devotees. Yeah, Vritrasura. You know, like that also.
Even in Vrindavan, the office were on time discussing when they saw that these ladies would collect the cow down. They are low class untouchables. But they were collecting the cow dung and they were taking the kumkum from lotus feet of Krishna and smearing and getting all kind of ecstasies.
Yeah.
So you see how the Shudranis are so much. You know, they were discussing how actually the profession is so called low, that they are in the highest levels. Only those 5 days they were coming down.
Yeah. That's why for the Vaishnavas the birth and the situation aren't important. But still, because of the conditioned nature has to be organized and managed according to religious principles. Right? But if one is beyond that, then there's no need of it. But generally for the benefit of others, then one always acts within the system, you know, as a madhyama. Presenting themselves as a kanista, but they're acting as a madhyama. So the uttama comes down to the madhyama platform. You know, so it's rare you see example in our line that the uttamas acted as uttamas. Like that. You don't see. You know. Sukadeva would do it. You hear about him like that.
Jagannath Das Gopachari embracing the Ganges in
Vrindavan. Yeah, yeah. But occasionally he would do. Occasionally he would do. Bhamsi Das Babaji, he always just, he was on his own, in his own, you know, like that. So it's rare you see it. You know? So generally it's like we see the acharyas, they may do it at times to make a point, like that. But otherwise, you know, for us, otherwise for them, they can follow or not follow these rules, it doesn't matter, because they're seeing it at a different platform. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jaya
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki,
Jaya
Chaitanya Gaura
ki.
Jaya.